All right, welcome. This is the RCFB Talk 12, and my name is Bobby Kairi. I'm one of the team that runs RCFB. I'm joined, of course, by J.D. Moore. J.D., say hello. What's going on in your universe right now?
Yeet, and I cannot stress this enough, ha! Happy Texas Bowl Day, everybody!
Happy Texas Bowl Day. We actually have someone in the press box right now tweeting things as we go along. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to have just sort of a discussion, talk about what happened in the New Year's Six, looking ahead, obviously, to championship weekend in both the FCS and the playoff. And we'll be talking to a few of our folks who were at some of the earlier games. And then we'd all, of course, as always, like to hear from some of you. So welcome again. You know, JD, before we begin, do you have yourself any college football resolutions since last we spoke and we've had the new year?
Oh, goodness. College football resolutions. Well, I can definitely say that over the course of the last year for, 2 years, for some obvious reasons, I did not get to go out to as many live games as I have always wanted to. But the games that I did get to go to, everything from Brawl of the Wild to Wazoo in Arizona to the Sun Bowl to the Alamo Bowl to the Frisco Bowl, it's definitely among my resolutions to get to substantially more games this upcoming year in 2022. There's a lot of great games that I haven't been to yet, a lot of conferences I haven't seen. For me, I definitely love being in the atmosphere of a live crowd, watching college football in the way that it should be watched. And that is exceptionally high on my resolutions this year to get to more live games. What about for you, Babak?
You know, I got to say it's the same thing. I miss being able to go to live football. I'm going to be national championship on Monday, heading up there this weekend to help cover it for us. It's going to be exciting, and it's sad for me. That's the first live game I'll have been to this season as we see the SEC return to dominance in that in another national championship against the same two SEC teams that were last dominating the national championship with the same coaches. And I guess if you missed it last time, here we go again. But, you know, they are in their spot. We had a playoff. I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I'm looking forward to hopefully a better year, a more sane year. I'm hoping, like everyone is, this darn virus goes away more and more so that we can get more games and less of the unfortunate chaos that we've had just for this bowl season. But, JD, I want to ask you, since we're talking about some of the games that we covered, you were at the Sun Bowl, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
Yes.
Tell me
yes.
about that experience.
Oh, my goodness. Well, first and foremost, I have covered a lot of bowl games in my journalism career, both with Red CFB, with SiriusXM, with various newspapers, TV stations. But I have to tell you, in terms of hospitality, the Sun Bowl is unmatched. The incredible work of the Sun Bowl Association was incredible from the moment I landed in El Paso until the final whistle of the game, an exceptional atmosphere. And if you've not been out to El Paso, you need to go out there at some point, not just for the Sun Bowl itself, but for that beautiful city itself, to see the architecture, to have the unique food that is out in El Paso. It's an incredible environment. And this year, it was an incredible game. We had an insane situation where Miami and Wazoo were supposed to play in this game. Miami had to pull out near the 11th hour, and they scrambled and literally brought in Central Michigan, who arrived less than 24 hours before kickoff. And you know what? Central Michigan went in, and they actually won. It was a dominating first half, went up 21-0, ended up winning it in a thriller, 24-21. And the game itself, the atmosphere itself, just an incredible ride. And I'm not just saying this as somebody who, you know, intently followed Tony the Tiger around to try to see what this mascot would be doing and watching him break a child's umbrella, which is one of the funniest things I have ever seen a mascot do. But it was an incredible environment, incredible game setting. And again, after a year that we got to go see the Alamo Bowl down in San Antonio with Oklahoma and Oregon, to see Bob Stoops winning a football game again, going up to Frisco to go see UTSA and Jeff Traylor's Triangle of Toughness duke it out against Brady Hoke's SDSU team, who had an incredible year as well. It was a fantastic bowl season to go out and cover some of these games. But I know that as you head into Indianapolis, I know you're really excited to get back into that bowl environment as well. Now tell me, is this your first time that you'll be heading into Indianapolis?
Oh, I've been there before, but never for a football game. I've been there for the classic, you've got a conference and it's in Indianapolis, but they know how to host an event. One of the things that I found amusing, and I'm sure those who are as into following sort of the college football culture, is seeing the reaction of the two fan bases, the Alabama and Georgia fan bases, to finding that they're going to now be facing each other in Indianapolis in January, which for, what you'd see typically in Atlanta or in Tuscaloosa or in the cross state of Alabama isn't typically the kind of weather, the kind of environment they're necessarily used to. So there's been some open complaining. And I think to an extent that's something you would see from a conference as dominant as the SEC has been in the playoffs, to be able to feel comfortable in being that critical about the host for this particular year. But another thing that struck me about it too is I think a fair number of people are heading down to Louisville to stay there and then drive up for the game because the hotel prices are apparently quite insane, which is interesting to me. But I know when I was making my own arrangements, the media rate was kind of shockingly high, and then I saw what the hotel rates were everywhere, and I'm like, okay, no, they are cutting us a deal. I'm like, I'm like, okay, cool. I guess I'll go cover this. I'm not complaining at all. I'm excited to see Nick Saban and Kirby Smart head up against each other, because I think that's ultimately what it's going to come down to. If Kirby Smart, he's got to get past Nick Saban, and I don't think he ever has. I think he's played maybe what, four times, I want to say, against each other, and
Yes, I
obviously
believe
they
the
have that.
record is I believe the record is 0-4 for Kirby Smart individually. And as of right now, Nick Saban, long, long time undefeated against his former assistants. Jimbo Fisher was the first one to break the curse this year when Texas A&M beat Alabama. But now we have to see if it can be done a second time with Kirby Smart. I think one of the huge things for Georgia is they brought in the talent. It's been shown that they have the capability to perform against a depth chart against someone like Alabama. But now you're going to have the difficult challenge of, is Kirby Smart able to outwit Nick Saban? And I think that's going to be your storyline heading into this game, especially with the SEC championship, where we saw the once inevitable Georgia defense that had crushed so many opponents just get mollywopped by that Alabama offense with the Heisman winner and Bryce Young, to see the offensive line actually drill back against Georgia in that game. I think what we're going to have to see in this championship game to see a different result is what Kirby Smart is able to adapt to in this new go-round. And that's the storyline I'm really looking forward to in this game.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to hearing some of these interviews as we head into it. I'm not sure. I mean, I Saban's obviously in his element. I mean, he's going for his seventh national championship. I can't imagine what it's like for some of the Georgia players going into this game, knowing what happened in the SEC title game. And sure, they became Georgia that we saw all season against Michigan. They certainly took some of the bite out of that. That tough loss for Cincinnati after being the G5 to break into the playoff. And then, I mean, I know they were upset about that, but I think a lot of folks, including ourselves, pointed out how many, the P5 teams that went into the playoffs, especially in the semifinal, got blown out in similar or even worse fashion. In fact, in many cases, worse fashion. So whether or not they deserve to be there, I think you could say the same thing for many other previous teams that had made the Final Four. But heading into this, by the way, before we get to it, I mean, Andrew, I know you're on, and I'd love to have you on. You were at the Orange Bowl covering it for us, and that was an interesting game to watch. Michigan finally get their chance. Everyone was excited. I mean, especially I should say in Michigan's fandom, because you have Harbaugh finally seeming to achieve what they had hired him to do, what they were all excited about for all of those seasons. Tell us about that game. You covered it for us.
Yes, I did. Well, hi everyone. I hope you are having a wonderful evening and a happy new year. As Bobak mentioned, yes, I was there at the Orange Bowl covering the game. And well, first off, I want to. This was the first time I covered a full capacity major bowl since the Orange Bowl in 2019. It was really nice seeing a whole bunch of people in the stands. Of course, there was a bit of a risk, but anyway, that vaunted defense of Georgia's. Oh, hey, the Orange Bowl's listening in. High Orange Bowl. That vaunted defense showed up once again, and they a lot of people went into the game, and a lot of people are discussing in the press box, is Georgia going to be able to shake off that loss in the SEC championship? And they certainly did. Kirby Smart in the post-game press conference said that we're always never look back, always look forward. I'm kind of paraphrasing there. And they obviously did that very well. And I looked up some of the statistics on Michigan. They were a pretty potent offense this season, and Georgia just absolutely shut them down. They only had one field goal through most of the game. It was only a garbage time touchdown that got them to 11 points with the two-point conversion. What was amazing was there were so many Michigan fans there, and I was surprised, and I happened to be sitting next to a Michigan beat writer in the press box, and they weren't surprised. Apparently they have the largest alumni base in the country or whatever.
They're hyped. I mean, this was a couple of our own side, a couple of our own team are associated with the Michigan fan base. And the sheer amount of excitement there was tremendous. And I should mention, for those of you out there who might be especially hardcore Michigan fans, this Friday we at our CFB are hosting an AMA with Desmond Howard at about 6 p.m. Eastern time. But I apologize for throwing that in there, but I thought that was kind of, since we were talking Michigan, I might as well drop that mention there. But Andrew, so tell us more about that. I mean, as the game developed, I can imagine it started to get quieter in that stadium, considering how many Michigan fans have made the trip down to South Florida.
Without question. I was standing outside of the press box for the opening kickoff. I try to do, because the sound is pretty muffled in the press box. So I wanted to get a good feel of what was the sound like for the opening kickoff. Plus, I got a nice picture of the kickoff. But it was ear-splittingly loud. I regret not getting a decibel meter or something to bring to the game, because I am sure it probably was at least over 100 decibels. It was painful to listen to. And then, like you said, just as the game goes on, it just quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. But then slowly the inverse is happening, and all of a sudden the small contingent of Georgia fans, they probably filled, I'm being generous, 35% of the stands. They only had, I think, the southeast corner, and that was about it. Then about like halfway through the game, they start overtaking Michigan in terms of volume, and that was pretty much it. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen. It was just, I don't know, they were just mystified, they were flabbergasted, but the air was taken out of the maize and blue pretty early on in the game, and they just never got it back.
Yeah. You know, and it was interesting, too, because you covered the national championship game last year, which was in the same stadium with Alabama, and winning it again. I remember you were talking to me about that game and how odd it was to cover a game in the, you know, it was 2021, obviously, January of 2021. The arrangement for the press was really spread out all over the place. Where did they actually put you? They were putting people in weird places to keep people spread apart.
Well, we were all, just like last year, to the best of my knowledge, we were all in the main press box, which is located on the southwest corner of the stadium, which is kind of tough to tell because the stadium looks exactly the same from all angles from the interior. But what they did more was they just spread everybody out. They have sort of an auxiliary press box to the side. It's still connected, but it's there's a hallway between them. That in the main press box. Everyone was a lot more spread out back then. They had plastic dividers on both sides as well as in front. And it felt like having like a small apartment with the amount of space we had last year being able to cover. But to quote somebody who was sitting next to me, was, or to paraphrase, we were pretty tight in this time, but that's par for the course.
Well, it was an exciting game. I mean, it was a big game, big scene, and an Orange Bowl is always a great host. In fact, I believe they also manage the Boca Raton Bowl on their behalf. Or at least they help them make those arrangements. Because you were at the Boca Raton Bowl this season.
And I did cover the Boca Bowl as well. And yes, the Boca Raton organizers work in conjunction with the – and I want to clarify here. There's the Orange Bowl game, but there's also the Orange Bowl committee. And the Orange Bowl committee is the one that runs the Orange Bowl and also collaborates with the Boca Raton Bowl. The Orange Bowl is a fantastic host, and I'm not just saying that because they're here, but it's always fun going there. It's such a nice stadium. The employees there are so nice. The committee members are really nice. If you have a chance to go out to a game there, I highly recommend it. Do you have any other questions for me about the game?
Yes. So obviously Georgia ended up winning this game by a huge fashion. From what you saw with the Bulldogs, what do you think their best strengths are going to be as they head into this national championship game for a rematch against Alabama? We saw Michigan as this vaunted Big Ten champion coming in to this game. We knew that Georgia had a really strong defense, but then what we saw was Georgia coming in so incredibly strongly. What do you see from that game, and how is that going to impact the national championship game?
Well, as you mentioned, the defense was all season long for Georgia was incredibly strong, and they just didn't show up that well in the SEC championship game. Of course, they're going to need that again. And maybe they can take some pointers from Cincinnati, because Cincinnati held them to probably about, I think, 20 fewer points than Georgia did. But more than that, also, they're going to need to get a huge, huge game from their quarterback, Stetson Bennett. He had a very big game. He stepped up and he got most outstanding player honors on offense, and he threw for, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was in the neighborhood of 320 yards, and he had a much less game. He didn't perform nearly as well in the SEC championship. So I mean, I know this is kind of like saying you have to play better to win, but they're going to have another performance like they did in the Orange Bowl to be able to stand with Alabama. And if the defense was smothering, they had, well, part of the issue, according to someone I was listening to, is that some of the Michigan receivers were losing the ball in the lights. And if that's the case, I don't think they're going to have that same issue at Lucas Oil Stadium. Or I don't think lights will be as much of an issue, but the Georgia defenders were blanketing. They were covering everybody so incredibly well. The quarterback just never had a chance to throw to anybody. And when he did, the defenders, the secondary was just right on him in 2 seconds. So they just need, again, to kind of that smothering aspect of that defense. And then Stetson needs to show up again. And that's the only way they're going to be able to make it a game against Alabama.
When you were interviewing them after the game, what was their attitude like? Did they have a specific mindset of this is what we know that we need to do heading into this game? What was the attitude like after they got this win?
Their attitude was, well, as Kirby Smart said, always looking forward. And he talked about how he wasn't necessarily a big fan of the Gatorade bath. He said he was looking for an actual shower, not a Gatorade bath. He and, to a certain extent, the two players that were there at the main press conference, it was Stetson Bennett and Darion Kendrick, who was the most outstanding player on defense. He got two interceptions in the game. They were basically saying, this is just a regular game, or we're not thinking about this game anymore. We're moving on. This is just one step in the direction to getting to the national championship. And they basically just set the game aside right away, and they looked eager to just move on and get ready for Alabama.
Well, fantastic. Well, we appreciate you going out with that report. And the final question that I do need to ask you, because I do want to move on to some of our other reporters who are covering some games. You noticed that they were throwing out oranges again after the game. Did you ever get confirmation on whether they were Florida oranges this year?
Unfortunately, I did not. But I'm sure I'll be able to follow up at some point and figure out if those were indeed Florida or California oranges.
The mystery that we will all find out soon. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. We appreciate you and all your work that you did out there, and we appreciate all the media efforts that you do for Reddit CFB.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure, guys.
All right. And while we are still up here, we have another reporter who came out here. Bobak, would you like to introduce our good friend,
yeah.
Mr. Kinsler's List?
Yes. Will, tell us about that. You were at the Outback Bowl. Got the Arkansas Razorbacks versus Penn State. Tell us about it.
That was a fun game. Tampa is a great city. First time there, it was a blast. The Outback Bowl was great. The crowd was great on both sides. I mean, Penn State has one of the largest alumni bases as well, and then Arkansas is a relatively short drive to Tampa, and it was the Arkansas's first bowl game since 2016. So there was a sizable contingent of both fan bases there. I know Penn State was disappointed in kind of the way their season ended, but I mean, they still fought to the end. Sean Clifford, I know everyone gives him hell about his performance, his decision-making, all that fun stuff, but he was out there doing his damnedest to try to keep Penn State in that game because Penn State was missing eight starters, their three starting linebackers, starting defensive linemen, their All-American receiver, Jahan Dotson, their star safety, Jaquan Brisker. They were missing a lot of players. And Sean Clifford was doing his damnedest to kind of keep the Nittany Lions in the game. But Arkansas's defense, led by their trio of linebackers, Hayden Henry, Bumper Poole, and Grant Morgan, did a great job shutting them down after the first half. The first half was – I mean, both fan bases are pretty tortured at this point, I would think, with – decision-making and just kind of overall play calling. And after a relatively crazy first half, it settled down in the second half, and Arkansas kind of was able to pull away, led by KJ Jefferson and the rest of that running attack. One of the funnier stats I heard was that KJ Jefferson was the first Arkansas quarterback to have 100 yards rushing since Matt Jones back in 2004, which was a throwback for sure. He went on to play for the Jaguars at receiver, I believe. But it was a great experience. Arkansas, they definitely deserve that after a few horrible years under Chad Morris and the final couple years of Bielema's tenure. They only had two players on the roster that were from that 2016 team, the last time they went to a bowl game. One of them was their captain linebacker, Grant Morgan, and the other was their now COVID senior, what we're calling a COVID senior tight end in Blake Kern. So it was a real blast. I was real happy to see them kind of get back out into a good bowl game and get that win for the Hogs. And congrats to Pittman. He's done an amazing job building that program up again and really making sure that they're kind of on the right track going forward. And they're definitely contenders for next year. They're definitely going to lose some players. But he's got the Hogs in a good spot. And Franklin's got a great recruiting class coming in next year, I know. And they should be primed for success going forward as well.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that I've always loved about the Sam Pittman hire is he's a guy who understands the culture of Arkansas. I've always been a huge guy in the idea of, yes, you can get in big winners and they can win, but the people who will get behind that program are the people who fit perfectly with that program. And Sam Pittman, first-time head coach, I could not imagine a more Arkansas head coach than Sam Pittman, and even just this year alone. Incredible record, and one of the things that just blew my mind was this year Arkansas was 9-2 against all teams that they played that are not playing in the national championship. And that becomes 9-1 when you include New Year's Six teams because they lost the shootout to Ole Miss earlier in the season when it was Jeff Lebby versus Kendall Briles in that incredible 52-51 game. But I think really when we look at that game, I'm kind of curious. We know that Brent Pry took the new job at Virginia Tech. How much did the impact have with him not being the defensive coordinator for this game, at least for Penn State?
For Penn State, I mean, it was both that and also they were just missing so many players. I know there were talks in the press box beforehand about some players possibly having to burn their red shirt this year, just in terms of making sure that they have enough players to, like, be there. Just to feel the team, really, because they lost so much in terms of opt-outs for the draft. It definitely was an effect for them. They were definitely kind of outmanned versus that Arkansas rushing attack. I mean, because KJ Jefferson's a real threat, and then you have Rocket Sanders and, I mean, Traylon Smith and Dominique Johnson just right there in the wings, just kind of ready to continue to run it down their throats. And then even when KJ went out with an injury – you had Malik Hornsby come in, who might be the fastest player in college football. He is a blur out there. He weighs about 110 pounds, but he is so fast, and he led them on one of their drives to kind of salt the game away at the end there.
I know that we've said before many, many times that it's always easy to go from a first-time winner to becoming successful, but it's really hard to keep up the momentum of success after you've won games. How do you approach going into a new season when you've had a winning season, and how do you build upon that winning success? When you interviewed these guys after the game, what was the mindset that they had regarding what's going to be built at Arkansas?
So getting built at Arkansas is definitely going to be an issue going forward, at least for this coming year, just because they're losing so many guys that were key pieces of their defense, at least. I mean, they obviously lost the defensive lineman, Trey Williams, who quote-unquote opted out after his DUI arrest. But they're also losing Hayden Henry to graduation. They're losing Grant Morgan to graduation. So there's definitely going to be a rebuilding aspect on the defensive side. Bumper Poole is a senior now, so he could come back for another year. But besides that, in terms of defensive presence coming back, it's basically Jalen Catalon, who was out for this game. But I mean, as long as KJ Jefferson's there, I think Arkansas is going to be a threat just because of his dual threat ability. I know people are getting on him about his size and just kind of how he might be too big and he might be more of a runner, but he's got a pretty good arm, and he's continuing to develop that. I think Arkansas is going to be in a good position next year. I'm not sure if they get to 9-4. I mean, I hope they do, just because the program really has been through some stuff the past couple of years. But it's definitely going to be, I think, more of a rebuilding year, just in terms of the amount of players they're losing. And obviously, they lost their star receiver, Traylon Burks, to early opt-out, but they're bringing in a transfer from Oklahoma. So we'll see how it goes, but it definitely could be it may not be 9 wins next year just based on the talent coming back. But Pittman, he may not out-coach you, but he will out-motivate every single college football coach I've seen. Like, he has those boys fired up every single game, no matter what. And you mentioned that they were 9-2 against non CFP final teams, and that's just a pretty impressive stat, to be honest.
Absolutely. Well, William, thank you so much for that report on the Outback Bowl. Only thing I wanted to add is it's funny to see. I'm impressed at how well James Franklin parlayed a 5-win opening winning streak to his season into a very generous contract extension for 10 years, only to finish it 7-6. I just respect the game involved in making that happen. And of course, you know, losing in the Outback Bowl. But we want to, with the time we have, and we're going to try and take this only for another 30 minutes or so. We'd love to listen to some of you and your thoughts, as we do every time we have an RCFB talk. So let's see. If you want, just go ahead and send us a request, and we will let you up. Let's see. First in the queue, Prince Bowie. Prince Bowie, I have we've given you the mic. Unmute yourself. We'd love to hear from you. And again, any of you who'd like to send a request, and we will be happy to have you join us up here and tell us your thoughts on college football and what's coming up, what's happened, what your thoughts are. The mute button is at the bottom left, as well as the ability to make a request. So, Prince Bowie, we have let you up here. We'd love to hear from you. He may be having some audio difficulties. That sometimes happens. We've had that problem with some of these formats. I know they keep trying to work on the Twitter space. It was even more chaotic when we tried to do this on Reddit's native app, which was a complete, well, they had its moments. As we wait for that to kind of develop, or anyone else who wants to raise their hand and talk to us, JD, what else is on your mind as we head into this season? Who do you think, by the way, I just want to say, we haven't really talked about it, but is this just going to be another North Dakota State dominant FCS championship? I mean, I feel like we got to say at least a couple of words about this.
Oh, goodness, yes. So this game, I'm really excited to see Montana State playing this game because I saw them play earlier this year. The kicker for Montana State is actually a family friend, and I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with Montana State coming into this game. I'm really excited to see them play. And, you know, I've just got this feeling that Montana State, especially with them being able to play that home game as the semifinal, I think they've got the momentum and the willingness to show up in this game. And I really like the Bobcats in this one as a possible opportunity. I'm expecting a close game, and I'm expecting Montana State might actually come out and surprise some folks.
I'm excited to see who pulls that one out. I mean, we've got Tori covering the game. She actually just finished covering the Cotton Bowl there just with the other semifinal, which obviously Alabama managed to top Cincinnati. It would have been interesting to see how Cincinnati might have done against the other two teams. We won't know, and maybe we'll know more how badly we would have liked to have seen that, depending on how the title game goes, if particularly if Alabama pulls it off again. So we did let somebody else up, Branson Nelson. Branson Nelson, if you can, feel free to unmute yourself. We'd love to hear from you. We always have the darndest times with these, with people being able to unmute themselves. We love hearing from you. So again, if you'd like to join us, please, we encourage you to raise your hand. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the college football week as we go into it. But, Branson, again, Branson Nelson, if you can, just feel free to unmute yourself, and we would love to hear from you. Otherwise, if you'd like to join us, feel free to raise your hand, holler at us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the college football week. Hey, Ben, I just saw you. Let's go ahead and bring you up. I know you've sometimes had some issues with the connectivity recent weeks, but Ben, unmute yourself. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Can you hear me first? That's always making sure of that.
Clear.
Oh, yes, sir. Hello.
All right. Last time I got kicked out in the middle of speaking. This time, hopefully, I'm not going to be doing that considering I have Wi-Fi this time. First things first, the Texas Bowl. As an LSU fan, you know what? I really have exactly negative expectations. We have 37 scholarship players.
Come on, you don't have faith in a wide receiver playing quarterback
or a backup long
snapper?
No, it's the fact that we have a backup kicker and a backup long snapper. That's the problem. Yeah. Look, at least the dude playing quarterback, he won a couple of state titles at quarterback in high school. And it ain't easy to win state titles, especially at, like, I think Lutcher's, like, 4 or 5A. Like, it's tough to win state titles. And the fact that you did it twice, That says you got athletic ability. He did throw a touchdown. It's 21-7 at the half, and he threw a touchdown.
Yes, he did.
So there's that. But it brought me to the question. It also made me think about back to how someone had covered the Central Michigan thing. And one of the issues that came up was the fact that Central Michigan didn't have the right uniforms. Did you know this is not the first time they've done this year?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so that was one of the wild things of, I believe, and somebody please correct me if I was wrong, they both sent white uniforms out for this game because Central Michigan was going to wear white, Washington State was going to wear white, and they had to do a last-minute scramble to make the uniforms actually work for this game. Again, it was another huge testament to how incredible it can be when athletic directors and bowl executives and administrators actually want something to happen, how they can move heaven and earth to actually make sure that a game happens. We saw that with the Sun Bowl and the incredible management of the Sun Bowl Association. They made sure that a team got in from not just Kalamazoo, Michigan, but down to Tucson, Arizona, then over the 4 hours to get into El Paso to get a team that showed up less than 24 hours before kickoff to make an incredible competitive game. That is a game that, you know, again, Bobak, I know that you have a lot of thoughts from your previous background of what can happen when people are motivated to make sure that something happens. And I thought that was a fantastic example when we saw the Sun Bowl look at the worst of circumstances and still make something incredible out of it.
Yeah, I do. And I do feel bad for the Arizona Bowl. Obviously, they lost Boise, which opened up Central Michigan. And with El Paso, with the Sun Bowl having an incredible payout that just blew out whatever was being offered for the Arizona Bowl, which has always had kind of some problems in that regard. I mean, some of you may remember the first Arizona Bowl when it was staged didn't even have any kind of TV sponsor. Now, of course, they were going to put it on Barstool was going to host the game, which I think now in 2021-2022 season would have made more sense. But when they first hosted it, not only was it not on a major network, but they had placed it. It ended up staging a Mountain West versus Mountain West rematch game, which was just a complete disaster because the other conference just didn't have enough teams to fill the spots. So, I mean, it's wonderful the Sun Bowl was able to pull it off. I feel a little bad that it poached an already dying bowl because, again, they had lost Boise. But I think it's a credit for that. I think a lot of folks felt bad when we saw several games. The Holiday Bowl, obviously, that really hosed the North Carolina State faithful, some of which had made it out there in absolutely. San Diego. Of course, I mean, you're in San Diego. Could be worse. Now, Fenway Bowl.
And on top of that.
Many Southern Methodist fans made it all the way out to Boston before they found out the game wasn't actually happening. But I felt bad for those fans. I think a lot of people did. And it was a shame they couldn't figure out a way to play. Who's the other team that bowl in Annapolis? Oh, gosh, the one that got canceled as well. But there were two teams left that couldn't make it work. It just sometimes happens that way. I think it was ECU. That was it. They couldn't make it work as well. So it's unfortunate when these things do happen out there. And obviously Memphis got to, instead of have a game, enjoying a fabulous weekend, a fabulous Christmas in Hawaii. And we got to then see a bowl sponsor have a field day. And we talked to them, of course, last week. But I want to see if we can get a few more folks in here. Hey, Branson, by the way, I just saw you're unmuted. Do you want to join us? I apologize again for the hiccup you were running into.
Yeah, no problem. I just figured it out. This is the first time I've been on this spaces or whatever we call it. But I don't know. I just logged on to this a few minutes ago. I don't know if you've talked about this, probably not, but I wanted to hear y'all's thoughts on the future of the Big 12 with the additions that are coming. I'm a TCU guy personally.
Hey, go Frogs.
Yes, sir. JD, I've seen you on Twitter before for sure. You know, with the additions we're getting with what Cincinnati did this year, with really the ability of all the teams we're adding, where does that position TCU, do you think, or not TCU, sorry, the Big 12, do you think going forward compared to the other Power 5 conferences?
So I think compared to the Power Five conferences, what we're going to see is we're definitely going to see a little bit of a decrease in revenue for the Big 12, because obviously if you have a huge brand like Oklahoma, and especially a big brand going with Oklahoma as well, both of them leaving to a new conference, you're not going to see as many television eyeballs as you used to see in the past. You're not going to see as much streaming. So the money is going to be a little bit down. But in terms of the football product and football quality, I think that it's a very exciting time to be a Big 12 fan. We saw already with the bowl system, we saw Cincinnati qualified for the playoff. We saw Oklahoma State win a game against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. We're seeing Kansas State getting a good opportunity here in the Texas Bowl. And I know someone's going to be saying, oh, the 39, the 37, the how many scholarship players? They don't have a real quarterback. No, no, no. That's a Big 12 win over the SEC. Claim it. Just like Central Florida did when they beat on Florida. Like, that's a thing of it doesn't matter. Big 12 beat the SEC. Don't worry about the asterisk. Don't worry about the qualifications. It's an opportunity to see football being played at a high level, especially in a conference like the Big 12. I think this is a time for very exciting football. I think if you are a TCU, a Baylor, an Oklahoma State, a Texas Tech type fan, this is a time to be excited about the new incoming fresh blood that the conference is getting. Because I think the four programs that are coming in are really high quality values on a football field. And they're all in destinations that I'm also excited to go back to and go see. I think overall the Big 12 is going to be fine on a football field. I think that especially with Cincinnati making it into the playoff, with Baylor looking incredibly strong, with Oklahoma State getting to and winning a New Year's Six bowl game, I think this is an opportunity for the Big 12, especially as we see, you know, this year the Pac-12 went 0-5 in their bowl games, didn't win a single one. Almost nowhere in the contention for New Year's Six, with the exception of Utah playing in the Rose Bowl because that was an auto qualifier. But you have to look at some of the opportunities that you've got through across the country. The ACC, they had Pitt winning and going into the Chick-fil-A Bowl, or excuse me, the Peach Bowl, sponsored by Chick-fil-A. But when you look at all these different opportunities, if a Clemson is down, if the Pac-12 cannot get themselves all put back together, you have a strong case to make that the Big 12 is the third best conference in the Power Five right now. And I think that's a great opportunity for the Big 12 as they welcome these new teams in.
Hey, JD, I apologize. I just want to break in for a second. Allison, our reporter who was in the Texas Bowl tried to hop on. I think they're because of course they're at halftime right now. Of course, we do know how how stadium Wi-Fi's can be. Even the most incredible stadium Wi-Fi will sometimes let you down there. Okay, there, I see she's trying to join in right now. So, Allison, when you can, we'd love to hear from you. Even a few words from the Texas Bowl.
All right, so I will say that, thank you, Twitter Spaces. I'm having some technical issues, so anytime I try to actually turn my mic on, it kicks my headphones off. But yeah, this game is going a lot better than I expected it to go.
How so?
For starters, I was expecting to see, 42-0 Kansas State, and I'm really surprised by this LSU squad. So they are young, absolutely. I mean, we've got someone who is a wide receiver, Jontre Kirkland, who is out there playing quarterback for LSU because that is their option. But they're starting to find a rhythm. Like, right at the end of the second half, we started seeing rhythm going. So first drive was 3-and-out. Second drive was a pick. But this third drive was sustained. And they were taking their time, and they ended up scoring at the end, which I think is a lot better than what many of the LSU fans were expecting to see. Because, like, here they were kind of excited about the basketball game. So they're like, yes, basketball, we got this. Football, we'll see what happens. But this could really get interesting because after adjusting to the half, at the halftime, LSU receives. So if they can get into a rhythm and they can be consistent and they can keep their offense on the field, they've got a good shot. My one worry is just their defense has spent most of the first half in the field. So if their defense is still playing so much because Kansas State has a strategy, they're running sustained drives, they're wanting to take 6-9 minutes in order to score. So their strategy is there. It's very obvious. If we tire out the defense and the offense can't hit a rhythm, Kansas State wins. So it's really interesting because LSU really could come back, and that would be fantastic. I guess really quick, just looking at their actual roster, there's so many freshmen and sophomores playing. Everyone was saying that Brian Kelly is going to have to spend a year or two rebuilding LSU. I don't know. This is very much anybody's bowl game.
Well, again, certainly when people say that LSU needs to do a rebuild, one of the other things is LSU is one of those blue chip programs that can pull the talent in any single year. They're going to have the composite roster. They're going to have the talent in their backyard. They're going to have the institutional resources to build on that.
Because, like, I went to elementary school in Louisiana. There are kids who grew up saying, I'm going to go play football for LSU. And it's not like one or two kids. It is most of the boys in my fourth grade class are like, yeah, I'm going to go play football for LSU. But they could really be on to something really special, depending on how this game goes.
Most certainly. Now, when you look at that crowd, I know that with LSU, they have the new head coach. They have less players in this than they would ideally want. What does the crowd size look like? Is this a big pro LSU crowd? Because I've known in the past, whenever they have had a game at NRG Stadium, whether it's the Advocare Kickoff Classic, whether it's a previous Texas Bowl, I'm thinking of their previous appearance when they played against Texas Tech against Cliff Kingsbury. Mm-hmm. There's always a really strong LSU contingency. Is that the case again this year?
I don't know, because for starters, Houston is absolutely a fair weather sports town, and it's a Tuesday night. So this crowd might be like 25, 30,000. What surprised me more is how much of Kansas State showed up. Now, granted, the press box is over LSU, but this maybe 60-40 in LSU, it's not what I expect from a usual LSU at NRG game. There's way more K-State people. And granted, Kansas State will travel. That's a Midwestern thing. They'll just get in the car and go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, Allison, thank you so much for the quick report from NRG Stadium, where you are at the Texas Bowl right now with LSU and Kansas State. We wish you all the best in the second half.
All right. Thanks.
All right. And now we've got about 10 minutes left up here remaining. I see a couple of folks up who have been patiently waiting to come on up here, and we are going to get the bird's eye view coming up here. I believe this is going to be our next speaker. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, we would love to hear your thoughts.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Sorry if I sound a bit stuffy. I tested positive for COVID this morning, but I'm doing all right. Just really a stuffy nose.
Oh dear, sorry to hear that.
Appreciate it. It's just I'm more sad that, you know, I don't really count the championship as part of bowl season. So this is like we really have just one more half left of bowl season. And yeah, just sad it's coming to an end. This is the first year I bet every single bowl game. Currently I'm 18-18, so this game determines if I go above 500 either way. And you finish bowl games positive, that's always a great way to go. Just wanted to, you know, look back at some of my – talk about just some of the better games like Music City Bowl. I thought, you know, that was one of the games that I feel like didn't – I've seen on, like, ESPN not talking about it. They talked about Tostita Fiesta and the Rose Bowl, which, as an Ohio State fan, I loved. But, you know, that Music City Bowl game was awesome. And also, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yes. It was such an incredible game. And what was your thoughts when it came down to the Tennessee forward momentum being stopped and that call being ended? Because I thought that was a travesty of how that game ended after what a wild pinball game it was.
It definitely was a travesty. And like, that was one of those games, just like watching a lot of Tennessee football, watching a lot of Purdue football over the year, over the season, knowing how high scoring those offenses were going to be, that it was just going to be as high scoring as I expected it to be. But yeah, like, I mean, I had Purdue money line, so I wasn't mad about the non-call, but I definitely was like, that is definitely some BS. But I was obviously happy as both having Purdue money line and a Big Ten guy, Big Ten over SEC guy especially. But yeah, that was just like an insane game. I mean, as an Ohio State fan, Rose Bowl is my favorite game of bowl season. But I think that may have just been, in a way, the most entertaining game just because of the back and forth, while the Rose Bowl felt more like a comeback as a non-biased fan. But yeah, I just love the Rose Bowl. Excited to see what JSN does next season. I think He's going to be
huge. Yes.
Marvin Harrison Jr., he showed out for the Buckeyes in his first career start. And, yeah, I'm excited for C.J. Stroud in this wide receiving core next year. And hopefully Jim Knowles can fix that defense.
Mm-hmm. And Jackson Smith and Ujiba, you know, the 15 receptions, 347 yards, 3 touchdowns. I feel like that's going to be a guy who's going to be high on some Heisman lists coming up this next year. As an Ohio State fan, what were your emotions going into that comeback for the Buckeyes and pulling that game out?
So at first watching that game, I was definitely, you know, first half angry. I said, you know, I get this is the Rose Bowl. I'm like, you know, maybe for us, I'm like, there's Ohio State. All we hear about Ohio State as a program is they're not going to approach this bowl game like any other game. But then you see Garrett Wilson, you see Chris Olave opting out. I understand that. Like, I was not mad at those guys at all. So then I feel like, okay, Ohio State might not take that 100% approach to it. And you see Utah come out firing. Even on that first drive where they ended up punting, it still felt like they were getting a high amount of yards per play. Well, you know, the Ohio State offense at first, the O-line was, you know, the 2-3 and outs to begin. And I was worried, God, was Ohio State not going to come out on fire? Once it was 21-7 and then 21-14, I started to have the feeling that, all right, this is going to be a comeback. My buddy asked me at halftime what I thought the final score was going to be. I think I said 49-45 instead of 48-45, so I was pretty close. You know, that second half was just awesome. It was nice where, you know, obviously that was one of the more fun Ohio State games I've watched. It doesn't have the emotional weight of winning a championship, you know, beating Clemson last year when everybody was sort of against us. But it definitely had just that really fun, exciting game because it didn't feel as high stakes as some of those other high-level wins that we've had previously.
Well, fantastic. You know, thank you so much for coming on board, telling us your thoughts on those games. And we're wishing you the absolute best as you try to break over 500 on that money line as you're watching this Texas Bowl today.
Thank you, guys. Go Kansas State. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely. Appreciate you very, very much. Now we got another guy up here on the line, Jacob Milham. You are up on here if you want to unmute yourself and come on board.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? You know, hey. I wanted to come on tonight. And, you know, I'm a huge Kansas State guy, contributing over for KC Kingdom for Fansided. I just wanted to talk on a little bit of the social media stuff going on during the Texas Bowl. Kurt Warner, his boy Cade Warner, is playing tonight for the Wildcats. And Kurt was throwing some pretty serious shade towards the Nebraska Cornhuskers football program, you know, talking about the lack of bowl eligibility from that team recently. I just wanted to get everyone's thoughts, maybe thinking about Adrian Martinez, the highly touted transfer quarterback, possibly getting his first bowl game berth next year when he joins Kansas State. You know, it's just really looking forward to it. Looking forward to the end of this Wildcats victory. I'm sure it's going to be a huge narrative on, you know, if this victory actually counts for anything with the lack of LSU talent. But we shall see what happens.
Well, again, I mean, I mentioned it earlier. It's another thing of if you are a conference who gets to say we had a bowl win over the SEC, throw away the asterisks, throw away the qualifications, hang that banner and hang it with pride.
You know what? I fully agree. I'm more thinking of the SEC teams, you know, still wanting to keep that asterisk. You know, hey, we did lose to this team, but we lost to them under this circumstance. And I do have to say, out of all the SEC losses, you know, because I'm still thinking that LSU is going to lose this game, I think that this loss would be probably the most qualifying, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well, certainly, because again, as we all know, LSU just didn't want to be there. Hey, Jacob, thank you so much for dropping in and sharing some thoughts with us this evening, and go Wildcats!
Go Wildcats!
All right, let's go ahead and move on to one more caller before we get to our 10 o'clock deadline.
Special teams, you. Sorry, we kind of went into stereo there. Special teams, you. Yes, sir. Mute yourself, we'd love to hear from you.
Hi, guys.
Hello, hello.
Well, a big K-State fan all my life, really. And, you know, just watching this, I'm just curious on, you know, I heard you guys earlier speaking about hang the banner with pride. You know, we beat an SEC team. But I feel like that's going to be the narrative from here on out, is that this wasn't a full SEC team. This doesn't really count. But at the end of the day, I mean, all of the players that aren't the ones that opted out, you know, those are all SEC talent recruited guys. Those are all, you know, high quality players. And I just feel like, at, you know, seeing all these people online taken away from this Kansas State, what I hope is going to be a Kansas State victory, is just tough, as a Kansas State fan, at least. But I was just curious on what everyone's take was on if this really counts, or is there still just going to be that asterisk next to it?
Oh, this is a game that it's going to count. You've got your guys who made it out down to Houston. They're playing in this game. A team was fielded against them. It counts 100%. 100%.
You know, that, yeah. It's just, there's so much talent on the LSU team. I know a few years removed from a national championship, and even seeing Coach O get fired was absolutely mind-boggling to me. I know the expectations of an LSU head coach is going to be wild, but, you know, this is still talent that was recruited, you know, by that squad. So, you know, to come out 21-7 and hear that report that came on here and was like, you know, we thought this was going to be a blowout. I don't know any K-State fan that thought this was going to be a blowout.
Oh, certainly. Again, like, this is a thing of when you've got a team like LSU, they have the composite roster with all these blue chips. They have the fence in their backyard to lock down the Bayou State in order to get a lot of really good homegrown talent. And even then, Kansas State has always been a miracle of a program ever since Bill Snyder came back and did one of the greatest coaching jobs ever in getting them to actually be a competitive program. They've been able to rely so well on the JUCOs, the overlooked guys, the farmland grown guys, to actually put together good, decent teams that compete and entertain on a regular basis. Again, though, I really do think that if you are able to play in a game, it counts. No questions, no qualifications. If y'all pull this one out, hang that banner and hang that banner with pride. This is going to be a legitimate win no matter how you want to go ahead and spin it. And I firmly believe that if you are a Wildcat fan, you should take pride in the fact that Kansas State had yet another winning season. Could very potentially bring in another bowl game. And if you are looking at a guy like Chris Klieman, who already has a winning record against teams like Oklahoma, is 3-0 against TCU, has done a marvelous job so far as being the guy who follows the legend, I think this is a lot of positive momentum for the Kansas State Wildcats. And I think it's something that you should take immense pride in.
And I appreciate it. And thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Well, we promised an hour, and it has been an hour, and we are going to go ahead and start our wrap-up here and thank each and every one of you for listening to us on RCFB Talk 12. As we had a chance to listen to some of our reporters, listen to a live update from Allison right in the halftime of the Texas Bowl, which is now in the second half. Go ahead and check that out. On ESPN. It's currently still, at least with my ticker, 21-7 Kansas State over LSU, but anything can happen, which is why we love this sport.
And if anything else, you got to remember, we've only got roughly three halves remaining of FBS college football remaining. Soak it in, because once we get into the doldrums of June, July, August, you're going to be begging for any kind of football to be back. So enjoy these last couple of moments of college football during the season while we've still got it.
We'll probably be trying to, down in May, scrap together some Japanese exhibition college football games at like 2 in the morning, because that's how desperate we're going to be feeling around that time. Which, by the way, is awesome. Out there, they do exhibition inter-squad matches. So it's interesting. They actually let their freshmen and sophomores mostly play in those games, kind of get an idea of who should have a spot in the fall season in the depth chart. But maybe that's an idea they should do here. It would keep us entertained in the doldrums, particularly of May, which I swear is the dark month of college football in terms of interest and news. right before we start to see the slow decrease and then ramp up, especially after the 4th of July weekend. Well, on behalf of JD and I and Will and Allison and Andrew and all of the folks who joined us, all of our guests, thank you for listening. We hope you have a great new year and enjoy the rest of this college football season that we have. Good night.
Absolutely. Good night.